Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Welcome to Upfront with Theo Walcott and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. This is the show that takes you into the world of a striker as we find out what it takes to be a top-flight centre-forward. Over the course of the next hour, we'll discuss what it's like to score a hat-trick for your country, making a name in football at such a young age, and what it meant to score over 100 goals for Arsenal.
That is the milestone goal for Walcott, number 100 in an Arsenal shirt. It gives him a two-goal cushion.
You're listening to Upfront with Theo Walcott and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. Today's guest is a man who has been playing professional football for 15 years, which is startling when I reveal that at the time of recording this, he is just 31. He had a decade playing for the England team. I think he'll tell me that he's not retired yet anyway. Won the FA Cup twice, was a runner-up in the League Cup, and was the BBC Young Sports Personality of the Year in 2006. That was the year his selection in a squad shocked the world. Today, he's home. After 13 years at Arsenal, where he scored 108 goals in 397 games in the Champions League, League Cup, FA Cup and the Premier League. And then three seasons with Everton, he's back at Southampton. It's the man who Pep Guardiola once said he's so rapid he needed a pistol to stop him. It's the fast and never furious, Theo Walcott. Hello.
Hello, you can keep on going if you want. Don't mind. Rack them off. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Is it true you're always smiling? Because you are, aren't you? Every time I see you, you've always got a big smile on your face. Is that a personality trait or is it something that you're just determined to enjoy everything that comes your way?
Do you know what? I always just feel like life is about smiling, and just especially during these times, I feel it's really made people actually slow down and really appreciate what they love in life, honestly. But with me, moving down to Southampton now, with this is just honestly brought back so many great memories. Anyway, I generally smile. I've not changed from day one. And I've always will be like this because I feel like it's important to, you know, I feel like people can sort of feed off your sort of energy. It's always about being positive, and I've just stayed positive constantly, and especially particularly now, I've never been so happy, honestly.
Well, that's great to hear. This programme is about being a forward. What holds greater pleasure for you, scoring a goal or making a goal for somebody else?
Do you know what? Honestly, one of the best feelings is to score a goal, really is. Especially when you're through on goal, you tend to back yourself. But I'm someone who would, if someone's in a better position, I always believe that's the best ball to do. And then it's his problem to put it in the net. It's an unbelievable feeling to score. Even scoring my first goal for Saints the other day, I know there was no fans in the stadium, but it is honestly generally the best feeling. But it makes it more if there's people there to embrace that sort of celebrations with you. But yeah, no, it's scoring a goal.
You are a forward. You've played across the line. You've played as a winger. You've played as the striker. How have you seen yourself over the years?
Over the years, I feel like I've adapted in each position. I've always said I love playing up front, especially in a two. I feel like I'm more, you know, I could offer a lot more as a two. But now when I've been playing out wide, I'm a bit more inside. And I feel like it's a little bit closer to goal where I want to be, not really stuck out on the wide. And I feel like you can affect a lot more games. And because I've had that sort of relationship playing up front with someone, when you're playing a bit more inside on a wing, sort of that natural sort of instincts of playing as a striker comes into play. And things just sort of happen without you really thinking about it. I always believe, like a lot of footballers, you ask them, you know, how do you do that? And they'll just be like, just happen, just it. And that's what I feel like when I'm playing up front, it just happens.
Do you have to work on those instincts, or is that something that has come naturally to you, or something that you shaped over time?
Do you know, I always see when you see players sort of train afterwards and they practice drills of certain sort of instances they're going to be in the game. Sometimes you can get bad habits from that because you're not really at the same sort of, you know, obviously energy and intensity of a game. So I'm not someone who does that a lot because I don't like to be in that sort of passive sort of mode. If you're going to do a drill like that, you need to be full out and you need to do it. I've seen, especially being at Sound, I've seen quite a lot of the guys do a lot of drills and they are full, like they're in a match situation. I think that's really important just to sort of emphasize that really. I just go with the flow, to be honest. I really do. And I like to watch and study other players when they're doing these drills. I sort of used to think, you know, when I was 15, 16, I used to love just keep on smashing the ball, not even any, no warm up at all. And these, I mean, I can't really do that now. I need a really good warm up to get going. So believe it or not.
Happens to us all.
Yeah, it happens to us all, doesn't it? Definitely.
But Walcott's picked it back off of Ramsey and he's shot towards the far corner. What a goal! Oh, he's taken it brilliantly. He looked like Thierry Henry with that number 14 on his back.
Did you and Arsene ever fall out about what you were? Did you sort of like suggest to him that you were a forward and he was like, no, I want you to do something different? Or was he fully on board with that? What, did you ever sort of have crosswords about what you wanted to be?
I would say we have fallen out. I remember there was a period when I played up front quite a lot, but I kept on getting moved out to the right. If someone would come on off the bench, then I was the centre forward, let's move Theo to the right, which is a good thing to have in your sort of armoury, to be honest. But the way Arsenal played as well with three up front, it made sense for me to be more on the right-hand side, to be honest. And in my Southampton days, you know, I played, you know, on the right-hand side. Nathan Dyer was on the left. We had Dave McGoldrick up front or Dexter Blackstock up front. So I always had that sort of natural right-hand side element, to be honest. But as soon as I started to watch Arsenal a lot more and see Thierry Henry, especially being my idol, it just made me want to be more of a striker. But yeah, I only had a handful of games up front, but I did okay up to then.
Excluding the team that you're in now, and I won't ask you to include Southampton, mainly because it's not fair, what's the best team you've ever played in?
One of the best teams I played would have been when Cesc Fabregas and Van Persie were on song with each other and me in there as well. I remember one particular season, I pretty much set up, I don't know, 14 of Robin's 30-odd goals in one season. So for me, them two in a team with me as well was probably one of the best teams I've played in, to be honest. And that's with England as well. But honestly, sneakily, this Saints team's not bad. Really, really not bad at all.
Okay, we'll hold you to that.
Had to get it in. Had to.
we'll revisit Southampton then, and let's go back to the start, because you linked up with the first team originally just 2 weeks after leaving school. But the murmurs around you as a prospect, as a teenage prodigy, had started well before that. I think Nike signed you at 14. How did you become a footballer?
Strange way, to be honest. I took it very late. My mate was currently playing for Stevenson, just a local team. And I just thought, oh, I'll come and watch you play. He's like, great, I'll come there. I'm literally in my school uniform, school shoes, everything. I haven't got any of the gear. And someone actually didn't turn up and they needed an extra man, well, extra kid to play. And I was like, yeah, well, I'll play. I don't know what to do, but I'll give it a go. End up scoring right foot, left foot and a header. Perfect hat trick. After that, my mate was a bit like, you know, you're not bad at this. Maybe we should take it a bit further. And then every day at school, we always used to reenact sort of our own, you know, at the time it was Nike, sort of Nike adverts and Adidas adverts, all that side of things. We used to generally do that every single lunchtime, break time. And then I managed to go on sort of the newbie district side of things when I went to Jersey tournament. And that's when a scout, Malcolm Elias, picked me up, which I'm still in contact with now at Southampton. So it was the weirdest thing that I wasn't really interested in football at all. Really wasn't. It was just, I don't know why I wasn't. It's just the way I was.
How quickly is that process then? Tell me, you don't know what you're doing. You turn up, you take your school shoes off, you get on the pitch, you score three goals, and then you're at Southampton. What's the turnaround?
Well, I went to Swindon briefly. I was still a kid and I had to grow up so fast around men, adults that have been in the game for so long, which was scary. But, you know, at that age, you just don't even, you're not even fear of anything, to be honest. I wasn't anyway.
There was such a lack of fear in you that didn't you almost kill Dennis Wise with a football?
Yeah, I love Dennis. Basically, Dennis came up to me and said, look, Theo, can you make cups of teas for the guys on the coach? I just said to him, no, I don't know. And then I sort of put my headphones back on and he must have thought, who's this little, you know, so-and-so type thing? To be honest, I didn't even know how to make teas. That's probably one reason. But again, I don't really want to be carrying hot teas down a busy coach. But anyway, weeks went on and I've just warmed up at the Staplewood Marchwood training facility and I was whacking the ball against the sideboards. And at the time, I don't know if you've been there when it was just literally pork cabins, I missed the boards and I overhit it. Went through the glass into the gym and then Dennis Wise comes out and you can imagine the lyrics that were said by his tone. That's who that did all the... And honestly, and I myself, I generally did, thinking, oh no, first the tease, now this. He came out and he said, I was like, oh, sorry, Dennis, it's me. So I literally owned up to it straight away because I thought, I'm not going to duck out of this. I'll take responsibility. And he was like, oh, don't worry about it, Theo. No worries. So I don't know if it was Sam doing a little bit like, look, let's not off this young kid. He's starting to make his way at Southampton, or Dennis really got on me very well. But I like to think he got on me very well and I had a lot of respect for him. So I feel like, that was, he owed me that, I think. Maybe, why not? But he passed in his leg. But he took it like a man, like he always was.
That's going to be the cue for the arrival of Theo Walcott. 16 years, 143 days old. He's going to become Southampton's youngest ever player, beating the record set by Danny Wallace back in 1980.
You made your debut for Southampton at 16 years and 143 days old against Wolverhampton Wanderers. What was that feeling like?
I looked absolutely terrified, but as soon as I stepped over that white line, it was me playing football, doing what I do best. Didn't matter who I was up against. I didn't really care. I just wanted to have the ball at my feet and run as fast as I could, like a bit like a headless chicken at times, but that's just the way I was, really young. No fear. And it caused havoc to a lot of players. It just did. It was just a new style that, you know, that you're starting to see slowly. I get the sense that I'm sort of like that quite like now again. I feel that again, that sort of buzz of when I step over that line, I get that feeling. You know, I've had times when, you know, you may have fallen out of love with football, which is so hard to say and admit at times, but sometimes you can be in a dark place. You can, depending on where you are and injuries, etc. But I just get the sense of that sort of reoccurring in my body, which is hence why I'm smiling all the time.
Well, that's good to see. Were you smiling as much because clearly there was a buzz about you just 5-6 months into your professional career where there were clubs circling, trying to prize you away from Southampton? You did move in that January. But in the period leading up to that Arsenal transfer, what was going on? Who was sort of knocking at your door saying, Theo, come join us?
Well, I had Chelsea, Liverpool were the main ones, and obviously Arsenal. But Chelsea scared the hell out of me. I was a ball boy. So they invited me to be a ball boy. I got to meet all these first team players. Zola, I had pictures of all these players in the dressing room. And it was just too much for my little eyes, really, and my head to take. I thought, this is too much first team side of things. And Southampton, this was Malcolm Elias, going back to the jersey thing. He's just showing me all the academy side of it. And that made me feel like Southampton's the right club for me.
Right.
And then they developed me and then going to the, you know, what you're saying about the next clubs. Yeah, Chelsea come back in again, Liverpool, Arsenal. And it was one thing, my idol was there, really, my Thierry Henry. And as well, Arsene, the fact that he gave so many opportunities to young players and what Arsenal come off the back of, obviously the Invincibles and all those players, I just felt, and Highbury and the new plans of the stadium, I just thought, you know, I couldn't say no to this at all, this opportunity. And I wouldn't change it for the world. And yeah, honestly, one of the best decisions I've ever made, really was.
Well, very quickly, you went to Arsenal And I wonder what it was like just walking into that training ground and seeing Thierry Henry meeting this team that was surging to a European Champions League final. You'd gone from playing at Southampton. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that you were turning up in school shoes and just going, oh, what's this game all about?
It was. Do you know what the hardest thing about it was? Actually lying to some of the Southampton teammates. And said, oh, are you going to be at Arsenal playing with Thierry and all this? And Burke, and I'm a little bit like, you know, saw in the headlights, really, just thought, oh my God, like really thinking, oh God, that's a big thing actually. But, and then not really sort of confirming it to them. But as soon as I walked in, the first person I saw had to be, and it was Thierry Henry, wasn't it? I looked so starstruck, and then Pires comes in, and then Lundberg, Jens Lehmann, Sol, Ashley, all these unbelievable players. I'm like, what am I doing? This is, I was lit like a kid with his autograph book going around, like, oh my God, look at this. But then when I go on the field, I'm just like, I'm just going to do what I do. And that's I just never looked back. And I took little bits from each player and saw them on and off the field. And I feel like I've never changed when I from that little kid up to now, which I'm proud of myself to be able to sort of do that up to at this long. So, now I'm really looking back at it. Really good.
Well, it was a great decision for you. And especially show it so in that period, because although you weren't playing for Arsenal in that season, you were selected by Sven-Göran Eriksson, the England manager, for the World Cup squad in 2006. Now, I heard a story, you can tell me if this is wrong, that Sven-Göran Eriksson came to the training ground in a helicopter to tell you that you were in the squad, and your Arsenal teammates were gobsmacked by it. What actually happened? How did you find out?
Well, I got whispers from Arsene that Sven was going to come to watch myself, and I'm a little bit like, okay. Didn't really think much of it. And then it was just, he started to come a bit more. And then basically when I knew World Cup squad, there was again rumours that, oh, I might be in a 30 or, and then, you know, that's it. And then I didn't really know that I'd be in the, straight away in the 23. And that really took me by surprise. And I was with my old man, and then he had all the Sky News, everything on. There was people saying all sorts of things, which I look back at now and I'm like, oh yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, yeah, you're right. I didn't play. Yeah, you're right again. Didn't play. Yeah, but I didn't pick it. Like, honestly, the amount of people that always come up to me like, oh, you shouldn't have gone. Yeah, okay, I shouldn't have gone. Maybe you shouldn't. But I may, maybe into the person, the player I am now, if I didn't go, I probably wouldn't be the person I am now. I would have, you know, so I just feel like that was an unbelievable experience for me to be there. Mm. And to actually witness like a boy's dream, really. It really was. So, and no one can ever take that away from me, which is great. You know, I've got, well, it's the famous pictures of me and my little camcorder going around filming layers and stuff like I was on tour type thing. So, which is a very good watch, interesting watch.
Did you feel ready to play in a World Cup? Were you as gobsmacked as everybody else?
Oh yeah, I was gobsmacked. I was, but I was ready. And as well, I was just like, I just wanted to play. Again, I was so nervous, trust me, in these games when, the England games, I was like, oh my God, I might come on. Oh no, I won't come on. But then the next day I'll get up for myself and work hard and training and really just enjoyed it and smiled on my face. And it come to the game again, I was so nervous. But as soon as I go up to warm up at halftime or whatever, it's fine because I'm on a football pitch and I just feel like, oh, this is where I want to be playing the football. So it was all the beginning sort of emotions of, oh, I might not come on. It was hard to take at times when you go from high to low and you got to sort of do it again and again and again. But I think that experience helped me to develop the way I am now.
What did the other members of the squad make of your inclusion? And did they embrace you? Or did they whack you around the back of the head like Dennis Wise would and say, put that camera down?
Do you know what? They embraced me because as soon as they saw me play and train, they thought, oh, he's not bad at all. I could see why he's here now. Mm. They may have thought before he shouldn't be there, and they're probably right. But as soon as I play football and I train with him, they thought he doesn't look out of place here at all. And I never felt out of place on the training field at all. You ask Ashley Cole, I trained with him and Sol, and it's great having them two with me because they generally looked after me the whole trip. They really did. They were great. I can't thank them enough for what they did. And if anyone had anything to say, I'm sure Sol would have dealt with them. So, yeah, honestly, I never looked out of place. I really didn't. And yeah, I look back at it now and think that was bloody brilliant. Really loved it.
Well, what a fantastic experience for anyone. But to do it at 17 years of age is pretty impressive. It didn't go that smoothly straight afterwards. I mean, what was your reaction to Sven leaving after the World Cup? His point of taking you was it'll benefit you for future tournaments, but then within a couple of months, Steve McLaren's in charge and he's putting you in the 21s. How did you react to that?
So I remember Steve McLaren phoning me and saying to me, look, I'm 17. I'm going to put you in the 21s. And a little bit, I was like, thank God. Okay, thanks, type thing. Because I'm like, I'm 17. I can play now. I can play in these tournaments. He said, I want you to build a bit more experience in the 21s and then to be ready for us. So I was a little bit like, okay, great. This is brilliant. I can really make my name for myself and just play for England now. I felt it was a very good decision, to be fair.
Walcott. And Percy challenges. Arsenal are level. And their first goal at the Emirates Stadium is scored by Gilberto.
Around this stage of your career, it's starting to take off. And Arsenal now in a bit of a period of transition, 2006-2007. It's your first season in the Premier League. What's that first season like, being with Arsenal?
I remember coming on for Freddie Ljungberg, I think, against Villa. And again, it was so surreal. But the fact that I've had all this preparation, and from the World Cup to training every day of these Dennis Bergkamp and all these players, I was ready. I was ready to do it, and managed to set up the first goal against Villa for Gilberto. And then that made me feel part of the team, and I was part of the squad because I've actually now finally played. But before that, I did feel part of the team. They made me feel part of it. But for me personally, match day, I never felt part of it, even though I was on benches, and especially with the Champions League run, when obviously Thierry Henry ran through at the Bernabeu, I was on the bench, like, type thing. It was just mad to see. There's a picture of me with Sol, Perez, and that lot in the dressing room. It's a great picture, which I love. But that first game at the Emirates, I felt like, this is me now. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, is that because you're actually making an impact? And that's the key thing, isn't it, for any footballer? It's okay being a part of things, but actually until you're involved in it and you're creating something or you're contributing to the team, it doesn't feel like you're in it.
Yeah, no, exactly that. And even the years gone by, like I was playing a lot and I wasn't finishing games, and then people, he's not finished games and all this. Again, that was just whispers of stuff, but quietly in the background, I'm just developing. I'm like 19 now, and I put on an old Tottenham game, I think it was.
And Walcott sprinting away on the right, and Van Persie has found him. He's inside the penalty area. He chips it over the top of the goalkeeper, and he finds the corner of the net. And Theo Walcott may just have won the North London derby for Arsenal.
And I watched myself, and I'm like, bloody hell, I was really good. which I've never really watched myself like that before. And watched at 19, I thought, God, I'm really quick. You know, I've had times in the game like, can I get past him? Am I that quick still? Just got to believe in yourself still, which I'm at now, which is what I'm at. Years gone by, I might have been like, oh, I can't do it quite anymore. But now I feel like I can do that again, that 19-year-old kid. I can do that sort of sprint and that, you know, recovery and just sort of run past people and make people get on the back foot and be scared again. That's when I'm playing at my best, when I'm not thinking about it. I'm just going and doing what I do best.
Talk to me about the first goal you scored for Arsenal.
So I can always picture the goal. I can probably picture most of my goals, but this one particularly, I can always see every single move and even know all the players that I went past and who gave me the ball, everything. And when Diaby gave me that ball, and I ran through on John Terry and then opened up and then obviously put him past Petr Cech.
That's a lovely ball through and a chance, and it's the first goal! Walcott has scored his first ever goal for Arsenal, and what a day to get it!
The emotion that it just expressed and came out, and even from all the teammates. I love Philip Senderos's bit when he sort of celebrates, like, get in there type thing. And then he was like, oh crap, I've got to get back to my position. That's how serious he was always. And everyone else just joined in and got involved. And again, I think there's footage of it. The video goes to Thierry Henry as well, I think, behind the bench, and he's dead happy. And so it meant so much to me, but it meant so much to a lot of other people because they've seen how much hard work that he's done up to now and all the stuff that's gone on. You know, he's, you know, scored the first goal in the Carling Cup final, which isn't a bad place to play. But sadly, we couldn't win. It's just the way it is.
You had so many great moments at Arsenal. What is your favourite Arsenal goal? We've spoken about your first one. What's your favourite?
I've got quite a few favourites. I scored over 100 goals, so I've got quite a few. So my favourite one, yeah, number one. I'll go for the FA Cup final.
Headed down, second ball won by Walcott! Arsenal strike first in the 2015 FA Cup final! And it's Theo Walcott who's got the goal! The man preferred to Olivier Giroud on the back of his hat-trick against West Bromwich Albion last weekend!
firstly, I'm English. FA Cup final for me and for many other, you know, especially English people and players, it means so much. But I might not have played that game if I didn't score a hat-trick the week before, maybe. Yeah. Because I was only getting back, really, from my knee injury. I scored a hat-trick against West Brom, and now Arsenal's probably, I can't leave him out now, type thing. So, yeah, that would have to be my favourite.
You had so many great players around you over the course of your career, your 13 years or more at Arsenal. Adebayor, Henri, Nasri, Cesc. You mentioned Robin van Persie earlier on. Who did you enjoy playing with the most?
I spoke to someone about this the other day, actually, and debated a couple, but it would have to be Robin. Like, for me, Robin van Persie was probably the best finisher I've ever seen, generally, better than Thierry Henry, better than anyone I've seen, because he generally made it look so easy. You always knew he's going to get on that left foot, and he made my job so easy. He really did, because I'll do something, give it to him, he's going to score for you. That was the way he was, especially that, you know, few seasons when he really wanted that golden boot and he'd go for it. And he was an absolute dream play with that left foot, was incredible. And I generally don't think there's ever going to be a player like him ever again.
I'm going to go back to the smiling thing again and that innate happiness that you project. There's always been there, even in the face of injury once, I remember, right? And you mentioned it, you know, with the reaction to the injury against Tottenham. And sort of delving into the sort of the face of criticism as well, because you had a bit of criticism when you were young, you were still very young. People accuse you of being more of a sprinter than a footballer, not having a footballing brain, which sounds incredibly harsh. How did you react to that?
I scored over 100 goals for Arsenal, so that says it all. Not many people do that. And I just let my football talk, really. I mean, if you've not got a football brain, you score over 100 goals, that's okay, isn't it? If I haven't got a football brain, I score over 100 goals for Arsenal. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense, really, for me. Whoever said the footballing brain thing, maybe they need to look at themselves. But I'm someone that I'm my best critic. So I would generally watch all my games and then think, well, that wasn't good. I maybe could have done that. But I don't look too much into, like, really for, oh, that's terrible type thing. I just think, okay, if that happens again, we can do this or we can do that.
Plenty more to come on Up Front with Theo Walcott as he discusses why finishing fourth in the Premier League with Arsenal was seen as satisfactory by some people.
At times it felt like that was good enough for Arsenal. It felt like it was a bit of a medal, but for us players, we want to win things, but at times, like, the club would be happy with us finishing fourth.
This is Up Front with Theo Walcott and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Fabregas winning the ball very well indeed, feeding it through to the left-hand side. Now Van Persie keeps the ball in play. Back to Walcott. Walcott with a brilliant finish. Oh, it's absolutely wonderful from Arsenal. You want to be successful in any industry, doing whatever job you are doing. Being a self-starter and always searching for improvement is a major, major facet.
Why go into any sort of role that you want to improve and do better? Like, I go training every day and think, I want to be better than I was yesterday. I want to be better than that player, because it's always, you're competing against people. Like, for me, I always used to think, I'm trying to please someone. No, I want to please myself, because if I do things that I know what's got me in the first place, it's only going to benefit myself and the team. But you got to have that aspect of respect for others as well. Like I say, with any role in the world you do day to day, you know, for me, even walk past someone, I smile. I give them a smile, even with the face mask on. I smile in my eyes. You can just tell I'm smiling. I feel like that's a big thing to do. And I do that every day. I'm always wanting to release positive things and positive energy. If I go to work and I'm done something right, I think, right, let's go on again. Let's be positive about things. Or if I didn't do that right, okay, let's be positive tomorrow. Let's try and improve on what I didn't do yesterday. So that's just who I am in day to day. Even with driving the car, I used to be, you know, like everyone, probably road raged or whatever. Now, what's the point? There's no need. Why get all stressed and angry over something and someone I'm never going to meet? I've been like that for years now. And my driving's a lot better now.
We are still in a breaking play here, because Theo Walcott is being put onto a stretcher, and it did look as though he was holding his knee.
Is that how you got over your injuries? Because you did have some bad injuries, didn't you? I mean, you've had back injuries, knee injuries, shoulder injuries, hamstring injuries, ankle injury. You've had a lot, haven't you? What was the worst time you had with injury, and how did you deal with it?
To be fair, I've not had many muscle ones. I've had all these impact ones. So I've had the shoulders, which were just born. Blame my dad for that, I suppose. The knee injury was the hardest out of all of them, because not really knowing that I did that at the time. With the Tottenham fans throwing the pennies and pounds at me, it was mad. That's why I did the 2-0. So I got pelted by coins. It was just like, wow, I could go get some sweets here with this money. Honestly, it was that much. But yeah, it was the knee one, because I went in, I didn't have much swelling, and all the tests were fine, all good, all fine. And I was like, oh, okay. Because it was really weird when I did the injury. It was like I had a really sharp pain for 20 seconds and then I was fine. And I could straighten my knee, I could do stuff. And I was like, okay. So I didn't much think much of it. Eventually have a scan, because I could have a scan because there wasn't much fluid on it or no swelling. And I remember getting the phone call, I'll never forget getting the phone call from the doc. And he said, you're sitting down. And I was like, oh, like literally. And everything just sunk into me, and I was like, just went so white, like, oh my God. And then obviously burst out in tears, and my wife Mel, she was looked after me massively. But then I looked back at that and thought, this is a blessing, because my son was born and I got to win it as well. And not many people, players particularly in sports, anything, will sometimes miss it, and I never missed it. And for me, I look back and then I think, you know, things happen for a reason. And that was my reason. And again, I wouldn't change it. Mm. I really wouldn't. I know it sounds weird, you're out for 11 months, but I wouldn't, because I look at football differently from when I have kids now as well. I always think about them. They're on my boots. I always think about them. I'm doing it for them. Not just me now, I'm doing it for them, legacy type thing. And so I'm now so pleased that hopefully they can now see me play, actually, because he's starting to get into it. They weren't really into it before. So hopefully now they can start to see me play, and especially where I started off, it's just weird how sort of things happen. It's like a film, really. Like, it's full cycle. It's really strange.
Being a substitute can also be mentally tough. Did you enjoy being a sub, coming on, relishing the opportunity to try and change the game?
Do you know, I always enjoyed being involved, be it starting, obviously that's the pinnacle, you want to start games obviously, but then if you don't start and you're disappointed, which a lot of players can just be, pointing a finger at the manager for not picking me or whatever. I said, no, let's try and think, right, let's make sure if I get a chance to come on, even if it's be it 10, 5 minutes, doesn't matter, affect the game, make a headache for the following week. Okay, if you don't get in again, let's try and affect the game. And if it keeps on going and you affect the game, you're still not playing, then you need to start asking the question, like, okay, what do you want me to do to get in the team? You bring me on the bench, I'll come off, I score, or I'll do this. So again, it's going back to that sort of positive sort of feeling. Well, why be all like negative about being on the bench? I feel like I've played in the Premier League for so long. I've embraced every moment. I'm living a lot of people's sort of dreams right now. Okay, I'm going to affect the game. Now it's squads. You can see these big squads that are, it's a whole team. That's why it's a team. That's why it's going back to the Southampton team. When you asked me about the best team I played for, and I said, you know, maybe Cesc, Robin. Generally, this is Southampton team's a very good team. They're like together, the trust. like I said, I never really took it too much to heart, but I'm sure my family or whatever would have. But again, I can only affect what I do. I can't affect what the manager does.
I brought it up mainly because I remember a game in the Champions League quarterfinal against Barcelona. You're on the bench and you're watching your team getting pulled apart. And then you get the little, come on, you're getting involved here. And everything changes.
Here's Walcott, latching onto Bender's ball.
Acceleration, that kind of spark. It's just a pity he wasn't on earlier.
I just go for it. We're playing against the best team in the world. We've got the best player on the field, who then after the game says these comments, which were just surreal. They really were. We managed to get a fairly good result. And yeah, like I say, I just play with no fear. I've got nothing to lose. I hope if you come off the bench at times, you've got nothing to lose. You really haven't. If you're losing, you go on there to try and affect the game. And if you come off and you've done everything you can, but the game's the way it was, it's just the way it is. But you've got nothing to lose as a sub. You need to go on there and just do your best. That's all you can do.
They were in control of the game, but you came on and completely switched it around. I think it was 2-0 when you came on, and it ends up, I think you end up drawing the match. You create goal after goal, and they're afraid of you.
You know, if people play high lines, you need to run in behind. You need to be front and be different to what we were doing in the first place. We had a lot of people coming to feet, trying these little things. And when you got, you know, when the player there at the back as well, that was quite quick, but centre arse, no, they're not quick. They're not used to someone that are running in behind them constantly. It's why that's what I'm good at and I still am. I can do those constantly. I can run and sprint all the time. It's just the sort of the continuous sort of jogs I'm rubbish at. But generally, it was just so different to what they're used to on a, you know, in Spain, and that's just the way I played. And the fact that Cesc that knew my strengths made his job easy as well. He'd know when to put it into space or when to put it to feet, and then it was just a different sort of aspect of the game, which completely, yeah, it changed. And then messing afterwards about myself was just like, oh bloody hell, even if Messi's saying it, it must be okay.
So Messi comes out afterwards and he talks about how dangerous you are, and what else does he say that makes you blush?
Well, not what he said, but when he had the ball and he wanted to face off on me at times, he would turn out and go the other way, and I thought, oh okay, so Messi doesn't want to try and run past because he's seen how fast I am. That's a good sign. So years gone by, we play a lot of games as well against Barcelona.
Yeah,
he asked for my shirt and I was like, so Lionel Messi's playing the world asking for my shirt. Wow. I got no words.
Walcott, he's got away from Happier. He's got three to cross to. Adebayor! Emmanuel Adebayor is the goal scorer. But the difference, Theo Walcott.
You played in some crazy games at Arsenal, didn't you? I mean, the 4-4 with Liverpool, that Arshavin scores all those goals, the hat-trick against Reading in the League Cup when the team come back from 4-0 down. Was it fun being involved in games like that?
These are mad games. The run when I did for Adebayor's goal and he's doing some sort of mad dance and all the players run to me because I've just run the whole pitch. You see that endlessly. I'm just going to say it, probably one of the best assists in Champions League. I don't care. I'll admit it now. But it's funny because then obviously we played Liverpool the year after, or even that same year, and I do a similar run to Farah Shavin's fourth goal, watching it back, and you can hear the fans like, oh, here we go again, type thing. Because as soon as I've got the ball, they're like, no, what's going to happen? He's going to run as fast as he can with the ball, and it'll be a problem. And that's exactly what happened.
When anyone discusses your career, they'll obviously focus on Arsenal. And Arsenal were a club for many years expected to win, but as time went on under Arsene, it felt from the outside as if league challenges had been replaced by an acceptance of top four football. Did that desire to lift silverware in the dressing room diminish, or was it always there, but maybe we just didn't see it?
No, I think you're rightly spot on there. I think it was always there, but we just didn't quite see it. There was when I remember Mikel, he grabbed everyone, and that showed why he's a manager now. He's a strong character. It showed what he is now. And we changed things. And then after that period of whatever happened, truths were said, people wouldn't have liked to hear things they were told or whatever. It was just the way we had to be. we had to be a bit more brutal with each other. We're too nice at times. And then we end up winning a couple of hiccups. And then we constantly got in the Champions League. At times it felt like that was good enough for Arsenal. It felt like it was a bit of a medal. But for us players, we want to win things. But at times, like, the club would be happy with us finishing fourth. And it was like, oh, okay, so we're... So then you sometimes you get a feeling from other players like, okay, fourth's good enough. That's fine. And then you don't want to push that a little bit more, so I might not push that more. And I'm a little bit like, no, like, especially winning the FA Cups, it's like, no, you're more than just the FA Cup. For me, FA Cup, brilliant. I absolutely love it. But I know for some other players, that wouldn't be enough at all. Mm. And it was just a shame that we couldn't quite do it. It was particularly the Leicester season was the one for me. When you think of the amount of points they won it by, and they were brilliant, they were. But we're the only team to beat him twice as well. We were the year when we should have done something. And that was really disappointing. To look back at that season particularly, and for Leicester, for how brilliant they were as a team and everything, but that was the year Arsenal should have won it.
Do you think that that hunger that is required to win big trophies ebbed away because the board seemed to be satisfied with being in the top four?
I think that needs to be regardless of every game. Like, you want to, obviously the ultimate goal is to win things, but I feel like it's that same, and I know a lot of players say it, the boring answer of, oh, go on to the next game, go on. But that's true, that's the way it is. You want to be and work as hard as possible in a day-to-day and each game, and not really think about the game until it's really at grasp, then you can really think about it. So you need to be on it every day and every game, and then you'll see where you are. And then when you get closer to it, then you can slowly think, okay, yeah, now we really believe that we can do it. But maybe at times we never quite believed in it. Maybe we didn't believe in our strengths at times when we had plenty of it. That's the problem.
Lovely ball, it's Walcott. It couldn't be, could it? It is, you know, it's a hat-trick for Theo Walcott. Just sensational. Theo Walcott has scored a hat-trick as a teenager for England, his first international goals, and England are in the process of recording one of their most stunning victories for many a long year.
When anyone ever discusses your career, there is obviously so much to discuss. We've gone through so much already. Inevitably, the centrepiece is Croatia. Fabio Capello giving you your first competitive start in an England jersey. And then all of a sudden, you're in Zagreb and you're scoring three goals away against the team that just 2 years previously had humiliated England. You're only 19 at the time. What do you remember of that day?
It's mad. It flies by. Like, I obviously remember all the goals. I remember playing pretty much the whole game with a stud missing. I remember my old man was in the stands and he was having a great night. But then after, I remember obviously getting the ball signed by all the lads. Oh, that's it really. It's weird. When you're in England, you go back to the hotel and everything's the same. When I got home, it hit me a bit more then when loads of people wanted to talk to me and seeing like the goals over and over again. It was like, bloody, okay, I've scored a hat trick for England. This is mad. And then when I came off for Beckham, I thought, oh, it's like bloody hell. Like, you know, all these pictures I see, and I get a tap from Capello on the back. I thought, yeah, it was brilliant. But that's lead me on to another story with Capello, actually, which was, you know, after a couple of camps being with him, I missed a meeting once. I'm always like to be on time. I don't like to leave people. Like, before this, I was bang on time, I think. I went to John Terry, and I'm young, and I was like, JT, I missed a meeting. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, don't worry about it, you're fine. Don't worry about it. So I thought, all right, no, I'm going to go to Capello's room. I knocked on his door and I said, boss, I'm so sorry, I missed the meeting. And he just shrugged his shoulders and closed the door on me. And I thought, how rude is that? And I go to John Terry, one of the most respectful guys in the camp, and he's like, don't worry about Theo. And I go to the manager, and then he does that to me. I'm like, bloody hell. I think he lost his job a few weeks later.
You were quite vocal about him being quite cold, weren't you? You wrote about him in your book. Did that go down particularly well?
I remember going to, this is the night he actually got his job actually with England. I was having a meal with my wife, Mel, and he was there. And I went and I said hello afterwards. I mean, Mel gave him the death stare, I think. I think it was. Yeah, it was strange. It was strange. That was the time when he didn't take me to the World Cup. That was the one time when I probably felt like after the Croatia got that World Cup, I didn't go.
Sorry, the night he lost his job, you were in the same restaurant as him?
Yeah, generally was. I was in the, it was Avazam Chinese. It was in the Dorchester, and I'm Chinese. He was having a great time.
He'd obviously just got a good payoff.
Maybe. Oh, God.
You played for quite a few England managers, didn't you? Sven, Steve, Piercy, in the 21s, Fabio, Roy, Gareth. Who did you learn from most?
I enjoyed working with Roy. I really did. After saying all the things about Pelle, I probably learned a lot from him, because how he managed, particularly the players he had in his squad, how he managed all of all those players, was brilliant. In some sense, I know at times it can be cold, but it worked.
Theo Walcott on the edge of the penalty area. There are six England shirts inside the box. One of them is Andy Carroll, who's approaching the ball. It's away by the defender, Jonas Olsen. Comes back to Theo Walcott with a world-class strike from 25 yards to equalise for England. He's been waiting a very long time to score again for England. Croatia seems years ago. It was, but it's a timely reminder of his abilities.
You had to wait for 4 years after your hat-trick for your next England goal. And it came in Sweden, in Kiev. I remember it well because I was commentating on it. It was a fabulous match in Sweden. It really was. Maybe not to be involved in it, and maybe because it was a tournament, it might not have appeared like that from the outside. But it was a vital goal that you scored as well. What did that mean to you to score in a major tournament for your country?
Well, I remember when it came out from the corner, and then the celebration was a little bit like, did that actually go in? I was like a bit sort of confused, type thing. Because I looked at it and I thought, the keeper could have saved that. Surely he could have saved it. But it obviously took him by surprise. And then what I was more pleased about was the next goal, setting up Danny Welbeck's goal. And he took his goal very well.
Here's Walcott, the man who scored their equaliser, bursting into the box, past two defenders, gets across into Welbeck.
Yes, Danny!
Oh,
yes, Danny!
My word! Danny Welbeck with a lovely goal. It's a PlayStation goal for England.
That was me being at my best, driving at the defenders, making them try and make a decision, and I go past them, and then he took it brilliantly, to be honest. He did. So, yeah, that pleased me the most. And then, obviously, we had Italy, the rest is history, really. That was a fun night. That was good.
England often get to the latter stages of tournaments without going that final step. Why do you think that is?
It's a tricky one. I feel like now, I'm like watching the England team now, and obviously not retired at this time, but watching them, I get the sense of excitement and enjoyment back into watching the England team. I think people have a little bit of England with, you know, where they played or you know, quite negative or whatever. But for now, I feel like the whole nation's behind the team again. And I really love watching England play. I love all this traction, all this side of things. Yeah, it's brilliant. And obviously playing against him as well, when you see his stature of the sort of athlete he is. And I'm like, yeah, bloody hell, yeah. Just playing for England. I'm like a fan. I'm genuinely like a fan for England now. I never liked that. So I feel like you're getting people like me I'm not retired from England, but on that side of wanting England to do well, and you're going to help the nation of, you're getting everyone behind them. You're getting players that play for England. You've got players that are ex-players that are getting behind them. And I feel like at times we put too much pressure on these guys to perform well. And we're disappointing, and we like to just knock them down again. But I feel like if there's a result or something that's not quite right, we look in the positives about it, about the next stages of the development in the team, which I think has been probably credit to you guys, to be honest, because I feel like it's that side of it's changed. And I feel like now a lot of the guys are more vocal in other things off the field as well. They're very vocal of anything they do in life and charity work, etc. Again, I don't know the answer to why at times England sort of falls short, but I think we're nearly there. I do think we are really nearly there. We've got some fantastic young players, obviously very young, experienced players in the Premier League. I feel like we maybe can go the next. The fact that I say we shows that I'm like I say, I'm with them. So we've got to be patient with it.
You've said three times over the course of the hour that we've been speaking that you're not retired from England yet. Do you ever think about pulling on the shirt again? Have you spoken to Gareth? Is there any sort of thought in your mind that there might be a pathway back?
Who knows? I just want to play well for Saints. right now and play with myself and for the team and for the fans and for my family. And then obviously I would love to be put on back on England shirt. That's the ultimate, again, to be part of this young squad. I've got a older head, I've got quite a few greys, I've got quite a lot of hair than I have. So why not? Who, you know, it's funny things have happened in the world. You know, I'm back at Saints, so you know.
One of the things that has happened since you were last putting on an England shirt is that a lot of the players have become more vocal about talking about incidents of racist behaviour in football matches. They've got behind the Black Lives Matter campaign. You would have suffered at time, I'm sure, from the stands racial abuse or would have witnessed it. What do you think of what the current generation have been able to do? And how important do you think it has been that we've seen this major wave of support for that over the course of the last year or so?
Yeah, it's like you say, the amount of support now and people actually listening to what people are saying instead of brushing it under the carpet. I feel it's really important for people to speak out on regards of any incidents that's happened in the world or anything. And that just shows that this generation of players is very different to what it ever has been. And sport in general is a massive platform anyway, and you've got so many role models that, you know, kids look up to these guys. And if it starts from here, it's obviously going to help the next generation of coming through. That's what it comes to, next generation. We want to try and make that generation better now. But I feel like we are on, you know, the right path. I really do. Obviously important to keep on with the messages and to act on it, not just to continually sort of slogans and all this side of things. No, we need to actually act on it. And I feel like things are acting now, and which is really nice to see. You know, I had an incident which was James Vaughan under 17s, I think, or 19s for England many years ago. And a player actually racially abused him, and he reacted in the manner which you would expect. And then obviously we had to hold him back type thing. It was horrendous. So that was all those years ago. So it's always happening. So I feel like it's getting less and less because of what, not just what football's doing, but all sports and all backgrounds of every sort of society. So it's really good to see.
Did you feel that there was enough support when that incident happened?
Not at all. Not at all. I feel like it, you know, it would have been very difficult at 17, 60, whatever our age. I can't quite exactly remember how old we were, but we're very, and you've never really experienced it in a football match before at that age. So you're a bit sort of lost in what to do and who to go to. And you just sort of think, well, I'll keep it quiet. So yeah, that's just the way it was back then. But I'm so glad that actually players are actually just sort of fed up and just, you know, continue to act on it. It's really,
I'm pleased that you've spoken about it, and I'm pleased that we've had an hour of talking about what has been a terrific, terrific career. Over 100 goals for Arsenal, 47 caps for England, FA Cup winners' medals, and a goal to boot in a final. I'm sure there's so much more that we could have covered and haven't covered, but it's been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. No problem at all. Thanks for me. Brilliant.
You've been listening to Upfront with Theo Walcott and me, Sam Matterface. And if you missed any of the show or just want to catch up on previous episodes from the series, you can listen on the TalkSport app via the Game Day podcast feed.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.